Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. National news analysts have been declaring South Dakota a proverbial Republican stronghold for decades. If you spent much time in the state, however, you know that history is more nuanced. John Lauck is an author and historian. He is president of the Midwestern History Association and review editor of Middle West Review. He's published an article in the current issue of South Dakota History. It's called "It Disappeared as Quickly as It Came: The Democratic Surge and the Republican Comeback in South Dakota Politics, 1970 to 1980. He joins us today for a look at party politics through the lens of historical scholarship. John Lauck, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Thanks, Lori. Appreciate being with you.
Let's talk about the title first. That's a quote, quotation. "It disappeared as quickly as it came." Where did that come from? Who said that to you?
That's a quote from Grace Mickelson. Grace Mickelson is a very nice woman who still lives in Rapid City, was civically engaged in the 1960s, and was a teacher, and got involved with the South Dakota Education Association. And you may remember there was a semi-famous teacher strike in Rapid City in 1968, and she was involved in that, and it all related to teacher pay. But that activated her political interests, and she got involved and served for a couple of terms in the legislature in the 1970s. And I was interviewing her about this era and how the Democrats were successful for a couple of cycles in the 70s, and she just sort of wistfully said, "Yes, it disappeared as quickly as it came." Mm-hmm. We were active for a while and made a lot of strides and had some victories, but then it evaporated fairly quickly.
That was her sense of things. You said that you had a new sense of urgency as you were working on this piece, because some of these people that you wanted to talk to were no longer with us. Elaborate on that a little bit for me.
Yeah, I really wanted to get this project done a long time ago. This started in 1995 when I was at the National Archives and wrote an article about George McGovern's start in South Dakota politics. And I started to collect all these materials and talk to a lot of the people who were active during the era. And I had every intention of finishing up this project on the 70s, and it didn't happen. I restarted it again about the year 2000, did a few more interviews, but then got distracted again. And then last summer, I ran across some of these materials, and I ran across a couple of letters that I had sent to people, one of which came back returned to sender. And I opened it up, and it was a man who I wanted to interview who ran for governor in 1968 as a Democrat, Bob Chamberlain. And so I went to Google and typed his name in and tried to find him, and I just realized, or I found out, that he had died a couple of weeks before I found that letter. So I thought, you know, I really need to get this project done and talk to some people and get this finalized before too many people pass on. And as it happens, some very key people to this research project, including Herb Cheever, longtime Democratic leader in South Dakota and professor at SDSU, and Frank Denholm, former Democratic congressman, they both passed away in the last probably 6 months. And they were very helpful to me in terms of tracking down a lot of the details for this piece. So that's why there was so much urgency.
And I'm wondering if it's really been studied or given the attention that it deserves, the Democratic surge in the 70s. Have there been a lot of works of research analyzing it already done, or is this a sort of new territory?
No, I ran across no previous research on this. There was a professor at the University of South Dakota, Alan Clem, who would write these short summaries of each political cycle in South Dakota and then publish them a year or so afterwards. Hmm. So those existed, but those were written back in 1973 and 75. So they were sort of out of date, and they were a little too fresh for people to kind of openly reflect on that era. So absent those, there had been nothing written on this era. And it's a very interesting, fascinating, unique era, and I was glad to get some of it in print while I could still talk to some of the actors.
There are huge social changes nationally, which we'll get to in a minute, but when you say how interesting it is, I mean, there are things like Roe v. Wade in 1973, there's the farm problem, there's all kinds of stuff, there's Vietnam, there's Watergate, all kinds of things are happening that they all have an impact on what happens here in the state, is that right?
Absolutely. Vietnam was, for many years, kind of this downward pressure on a lot of office holders, and just kind of created this atmosphere of rebellion against the establishment. And I think in the early years of his career, probably helped Senator McGovern to a certain extent. But at some point, he crossed the threshold when he became a little bit too extreme in his views on the war, and I think people began to turn against him a little bit by the early 1970s. And in a very interesting story that no one really seems to remember, in 1974, George McGovern was challenged by a young man who had never held political office before by the name of Leo Thorsness, and he was a Medal of Honor recipient from the Vietnam War, and he had been captured and put in the Hanoi Hilton for 5 years. And when he was in the Hanoi Hilton, the Viet Cong would play McGovern's speeches on a loudspeaker for him to hear and all the other prisoners to hear for hours on end. And so when he was finally released, he said, "I'm going to run against Senator McGovern because I think what he was doing back here during the war was very irresponsible." So this man with no name ID, this man with no money, no political experience, runs and comes within a couple of points of beating Senator McGovern in 1974, which is a chapter of our history that's completely forgotten. But again, that shows the intensity of the feelings about the war during that era.
Let's go back a little bit before that. And what is it that McGovern, he understands agriculture in a way that perhaps his predecessors do not. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, McGovern was a professor over at Dakota Wesleyan and decided to get interested or become active in politics, and very smartly made himself a master of farm policy. And he could talk in great detail about the federal wheat programs and the corn hog cycle and 100% of parity and all these buzzwords that were associated with ag policy for many years. And in the 50s and 60s, there was a very intense farm crisis that's long forgotten. But it, you know, caused a lot of farmers to leave the land, and there was a lot of concern about small farmers being driven out of business. And McGovern became a very strong advocate working with the South Dakota Farmers Union to address those problems, and was on the Ag Committee in Washington, et cetera. And that was kind of his persona. That's what he was known for up until about 1968, when he started to come out of his shell a little bit and become more of a national figure. And he dipped his toe in the presidential race in 1968. And most importantly, he decided that he was going to become the leading opponent of the Vietnam War, and became a major thorn in the side of LBJ and Richard Nixon. And that's what caused him to rise through the Democratic ranks and get the nomination in 1972.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Dakota Midday. My guest is John Lauck. He is the president of the Midwestern History Association. We're talking about an article that he wrote about the Democratic surge and Republican comeback in South Dakota politics, 1970s. John Lauck, I'm wondering, who were some of those other players, the other Democrats that really gained traction during the McGovern era?
Well, most importantly was a young state senator by the name of Richard Kneipp, who set up his business in Salem. He was originally from Arlington area, but he set up his milking machine sales business in Salem. And he had eight sons, no daughters, eight sons. And he was a very active, energetic campaigner. And he ran for the state Senate and got elected in 1964 and stayed involved in the state legislature. And then made a run for the governorship in 1970. And he, at 37 years old, won his race to be governor. And he did that, in a nutshell, by exploiting the farm problem and criticizing the Republican governor for not doing enough to deal with the farm program.
But who was that? Who was the governor that he beat? That's
in 1970, he beat the sitting Republican governor, Frank Farrar.
Okay.
Who's still alive and very active up in Britain, South Dakota, and up until a few years ago, was still running Ironman marathons. And he was also a very young person, elected in his 30s as governor. This is one of the kind of interesting themes of this era, was the youth revolt, as it used to be called, or young people getting involved in the political process. And you certainly see that on the Vietnam War side. But there were a lot of very young people who got involved in politics and became very successful and became the future leaders of each party.
What inspires Knipe to make his run for governor? Does he have a sort of agenda?
Yes, actually. It was John F. Kennedy ran in 1960, won the presidency in a close election, and became the first Catholic president of the United States. And Dick Knipe was a young German Catholic from a Catholic family in South Dakota I've written earlier about anti-Catholicism in South Dakota and South Dakota being sort of a Protestant-dominated state for many years. And there were Catholics in the state who felt left out of the political system or marginalized, and Knipe was among them, and he was inspired to get involved in politics by John F. Kennedy, as a lot of other people were. And he got involved in kind of a Catholic social justice group over in Salem, and during one of the conversations in that group, they said, you should run for the legislature, you should get involved, that's where your skills lie. And that's what prompted him to get into elective office.
How good are they at getting out the vote during this decade? People like McGovern, people like Knipe, how good are they at mobilizing their base in the state?
Well, this really was one of the secrets to the Democratic success. The Republicans had been so dominant for so long that they really didn't even work very hard at doing get out the vote and voter identification work. But starting with the McGovern campaign in earnest in 1968, and again with the help of Herb Cheever and some other young activist types, the Democrats began to perfect this system for figuring out exactly how many voters they needed to get out, and then creating the list for it electronically, and then distributing the list and making sure they got their people to the polls. And the Republicans really didn't catch up on this until about 1976. They started to do more voter identification and get out the vote work. And I think that contributed to them turning the tide and making a comeback in the late 1970s. But prior to that, the Democrats kind of dominated voter identification.
And what's the state legislature look like at this time then?
Well, prior to 1970, and this is kind of the key year for the Democratic surge, prior to 1970, it was very much dominated by Republicans, just like it is today. Famously, when McGovern started helping the Democrats in the mid-1950s, the legislature had 108 Republicans and 2 Democrats. Huh. So that shows you what the Democrats were up against during those years. And this was a cause for, this was a motivation for them to get organized and try to win some elections. And so by 1972, after those elections, they had captured a slight majority in the Senate, and they had a tie in the House of Representatives. So they had a working coalition there where they could pass some things, and they were able to pass a number of measures.
We have only scratched the surface of what's in just this piece alone in South Dakota History, the Journal of the Historical Society. But I'm wondering if, to sum up, you could give me an idea of, is there an obvious legacy for the state of the 1970s and the Democratic surge? When you look at, you know, post that time, was there an obvious legacy?
Well, I've been working on these books about South Dakota politics and political culture with John Miller and others in recent years, and we've been trying to think very broad about this. I mean, what are the main themes of South Dakota political history, and what defines the politics of the state? And I think when you're trying to explain this Democratic surge in the early 70s, you really have to go back to the theory of the importance of agrarian politics to Democrats in South Dakota. The three big surges for the Democrats in during the populist 1890s and in 1936 during the Depression and then 70s, their success was attributable to farm politics. And I think if you're going to, you know, sum up why Democrats have periodic moments of success in South Dakota, you can trace it to farm politics.
John, where can we get a copy of the South Dakota History Journal? The library, obviously, but do you know where you could order one to read the rest of the article?
Yes, I think the easiest way is to go to the South Dakota State Historical Society website and pull up the little tab for South Dakota History, the Journal of South Dakota History, and there's a they explain very easily there how to get a copy. And I should say that it is a marvelous journal. I've worked with a lot of journals over the years, and they really do amazing work there, and they put a lot of work into fact-checking and doing copy editing, which not all journals do, but we have a real gem in Pierre with South Dakota History. So
also in this issue, the Northern League and the Aberdeen, you can read about baseball, too, in the same issue. So I agree with you. It's a good read.
John, that's right. The Aberdeen Pheasants. There's an article about the famous amateur team, the Aberdeen Pheasants.
John Lauck is president of Midwestern History Association, and he's the review editor of Middle West Review. Thank you so much for joining us today, sir.
Thanks, Lori. Appreciate it.